Brian, I don't know what you wanted to be when you grew up.
I actually wanted to be a footballer.
Of course you did.
But of course, all sporting ability and my complete disinterest in football kind of put an end to that.
You're in Reading though, aren't you? So you'd probably fit right in with Reading FC, I'd have thought, at the moment.
thanks for that, buddy. Thank you. What about you? What did you want to be
I wanted to be a Spitfire pilot.
Very noble. Yeah,
and every playtime at school, I'd go around pretending to be a pilot, which was, it was what it was. It was a bit strange. It was only later that I realised Spitfires kind of aren't really a plane that people fly a lot anymore, but they are. They are pretty great. But we've got a little game for you, as is the nature of these things. We should have some slides up on the screen. And the game is, when I grow up, I want to be. And what Brian and I have been able to do is we've spoken to a few of the staff here and we asked them, what did you want to be when you grew up? And we're going to go through a few of our staff team and we're going to find out some options and then I'm going to get you to put your hands up to guess what you think they wanted to be when they grew up. So should we have our first one? Here we go. Our first one is... Sammy Jordan. So that's the guy. That is me. Yeah, the young Sammy. So she either wanted to be a vet, a nurse, or a cloud. That was a cackle, Sammy. Right, let's go. Who thinks that Sammy wanted to be a vet when she grew up? A couple of you. Not very many. A three or four. Okay. What about a nurse? Lots and lots of you. Okay. Finally, what about a cloud? Okay. Can we have the unveil? Shall we find out what she actually wanted to be? She wanted to be a nurse. So really well done if you went for that second one. Let's have our next person. Right. This is PJ. Yeah. Did I hear it? Oh. So when PJ wanted to grow up, he either wanted to be a racing driver, a chocolate king, which frankly sounds pretty good to me, or a paramedic, continuing the medical line. So, anyone think he wanted to be a racing driver? Most people in this corner, apparently, and a few people at the back there, and a couple of people over there. That's quite a few of you. What about a chocolate king? All the kids. Like, that's exactly what I want to be when I grow up. Whatever a chocolate king does. And finally, anyone think he wanted to be a paramedic? A smattering. Well, let's see who's right. It is the smattering. Well done. Yeah. Okay, we've got a couple more. Let's go to the next person. This is Emlyn. You've not changed, Emlyn. You've got a bit of... Okay. So, Emlyn either wanted to be a pilot, like me. Yeah, good choice if he went with that one. A postman or invisible. So, who thinks he wanted to be a pilot? Flying up in planes. Okay, a few of you. Postman. These guys over here, you guys at the back. And finally, invisible. Yeah, don't blame me for that. Let's find out the answer, though. It was a pilot. Well done, Emlyn. Good choice, I have to say. Okay, and this is our final one. This is our vicar. This is Mike. Again. Not really changed, to be honest. He's not here today, is he? You. When I grow up, I want to be a member of ABBA. I'm not going to grow up. Or an England batsman. Okay. So if you think you wanted to be a musician, part of ABBA, put your hands up. Only a couple of you. Okay. I'm not going to grow up. He's going to be like Peter Pan. Okay. Thank you very much. And then finally, what about an England batsman, a cricketer? Lots of you. He does love cricket. Let's find out the answer. And it is an England batsman. Yeah, brilliant. Well done. It's just nice seeing our people when they're kids, isn't it? I asked Lydia, my daughter, who's 2.5, a few weeks ago, what she wanted to be when she grew up. You know, did she want to be a firefighter? No, she didn't want to be a firefighter. Did she want to be a doctor or a nurse? No, didn't want to be a doctor or a nurse. Did she want to build houses, be a builder? No. Lydia, what do you want to be when you grow up? me want to work at Peppa Pig World. I thought, oh no. My suspicion is, if I ask her in, I don't know, a year's time or whatever it might be, that desire might have changed. You know, it's a worthy ambition, but it might have changed. I suspect it'll be Paw Patrol soon. That's my guess. If you're wondering, is there a Paw Patrol world? There isn't, but there is a Paw Patrol Live, which is something. If you're wondering what on earth Paw Patrol is, all I can say is I'm wishing I was in your shoes right now, to be honest. But the point is, I suppose, that we all have desires. We all have things that we want to fulfill. We all have things that we want to accomplish or do. Maybe we dream about the sort of job we want to have in the future, or the not-so-future at the moment, or maybe the perfect house that we want to have, maybe the one that we want to marry, be in a relationship with, where we want to live. Maybe we want to have good health, or we're worried about issues regarding money or whatever it might be, and we want them to go away, so our desires are fixed very much to do with them. Maybe we have desires about our loved ones. Maybe they're unwell, or maybe they've already passed away and we would like them back. We all have desires. And as we get older, those desires, I am sure, change. But even with say, Lydia, even though I know her desires are probably going to change as she gets older, that doesn't stop me wanting to talk to her and for her to tell me what she wants in her life, what her desires are. And I'm sure the same is true with God as well. You know, he wants to be in a relationship with us. He wants us to talk to him about what we want in our lives, even if it's not necessarily what we might end up doing eventually. Sometimes they can be good desires, sometimes they can be bad, and sometimes it doesn't matter. They're sort of neutral. I wonder if you've heard the story of Mrs. Nothing. Mrs. Nothing was a lady who didn't own really anything at all, and she lived in a faraway place. She didn't have anything in her cupboards. She didn't have anything in her house. She told everyone that she met that she had nothing at all, and she was miserable for it. She was just really, really grumpy. And then one day, Mrs. Nothing met a leprechaun whose name was George. And this leprechaun, as everyone knows, can grant wishes. So George the leprechaun, he took pity on her, and he knew that she didn't have anything. So he said to her, look, I'm going to give you 3 wishes. You know, you can have the things that you desire most in the world. And so Mrs. Nothing, she looked at George the leprechaun and said, the one thing I desire, the thing I desire most about anything at all, is an orange. If I had an orange, I would be happy. If I had an orange, my life would be complete. So George clicked his fingers, and an orange appeared, and she wasn't happy. So she did something clever next. She said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to have 36 more wishes. Yeah. And George said, well, fair enough, but it won't make you any happier. So she said, okay, well, we'll try that. I'm going to have the biggest house in the world, bigger than Buckingham Palace, with 1,000 rooms. And now I'm going to wish for the fastest cars in the world. But guess what? It didn't make her any happier. So she got through all the wishes, and she asked for thousands more, and she was the richest woman in the world. She was, you know, the most famous person in the world. She asked for, you know, beauty and all the rest of it. But she wasn't any happier. And eventually she said to George, I wish I was happy. And George said, well, I'm afraid that's the one wish that I can't grant. I can't make you happy. And she said, well, how do I get happy then? He says, well, the thing you've got to do is you've got to fix your desires on the things that are really, really, really important. And what you've got to do with all that stuff that you have, all the stuff that I've given you, is you need to give it all away until you have just enough of what's left for yourself. And she went away and she gave them to all the people around her. She just kept what was needed left. And you know what? She was much, much happier. God wants to hear our desires, But those material desires aren't the things that are going to bring us happiness. They're not going to bring us closer to God. It's our relationship with Him that's important. And we're going to look a little bit more about that later on. But I think, Brian, you've got something to show us first.
Thank you, Andy.
I believe.
I think so, yes.
So, in my opinion, every church service needs to have two key things. Number one is a solid focus on the gospel, obviously. And then number two is a funny cat video. And so, Sheila, if you would, I think we might hopefully have one. So there we go, funny cats. For me, that video kind of sums up what a lot of life is like. Does anybody here identify with the cat? Anybody feeling like the cat? I know very often I feel like that cat. And I think David, who wrote our psalm, this morning's psalm, Psalm 63, would have identified with the cat. You know, you can go out all guns blazing, full of enthusiasm, everything's great, and then completely miss the roof. And life has a habit of throwing things in our way that kind of knock the wind out of us. And that's as true back in the time when the Psalms were written as it is now. Psalm 63 starts off full of adoration, full of praise. It reflects on the good things of life and is full of joyful worship. And then we get to verses 9 and 10 where the tone changes and it starts to get darker and it starts talking about David's enemies. Now, Psalm 63 was written when David was in the wilderness, so it could have been written at one of two points, either when David was fleeing from King Saul, who wanted to kill him in 1 Samuel chapter 24, or alternatively, it was when he was fleeing from his own son, Absalom, who was staging a coup d'etat and, again, was trying to kill David. That's in 2 Samuel 15. So it's not really a very happy time for David. And so, as well as David's immediate desires for things like food, for water, for shelter, David desires to be back home in Jerusalem. David desires safety. David desires reconciliation with those who are out to kill him. And so, the psalm that's full of praise, full of adoration, isn't written whilst David is on cloud nine, where everything's fine, everything's peachy keen. It's written from a place of absolute desperation. And as you can see in later on in 1 and 2 Samuel, David is suffering from a real emotional burden. The emotional weight on him is absolutely huge. And I think it's in that context that the psalm becomes so moving and so challenging. So in preparing for the talk, I did a quick skim read of all of the Psalms. And so these numbers aren't definitive because it was just a quick skim read. But I counted 57 of 150 Psalms. So just over a third where there had been a disaster or the writer was scared or was carrying a huge emotional weight. And it's in response to these that the psalmist then cries out to God. I think the temptation for the psalmist and the temptation for all of us, I know myself, is that when we're hit by hard times, the temptation is to turn away from God, to think that the hard times that we face are a reflection that God has maybe given up on us or that God doesn't care anymore. But here, David resists that temptation, and instead he uses the heartbreaking situation that he's in as further fuel to ignite his desire for God. He cannot and he does not want to face the battle alone. And so he craves, he desires the one who can help him. He says, "Earnestly I seek you. I think of you through the watches of the night. Because you are my help, I sing in the shadow of your wings." He desires God with all of his heart. David's hardship, David's pain, David's emotional burden, they don't pull him away from God, but instead they push him to God. They increase his desire for him. Okay, so bear with me 1 second. It's a stool down here. So this is me. This is me in my ivory tower. This is me in the pulpit preaching a sermon on how the psalmist's desire for God, how his the difficult times he was in pushed him to God, and how his desire increased during times of difficulty. But I'm going to come out of my ivory tower, because this is me as a 32-year-old administrator, as a man who just goes through the normal things of everyday life, acknowledging that that is so very often easier said than done. It's a bit like when C.S. Lewis, famous C.S. Lewis, wrote The Problem of Pain, where he gave the philosophical, theological reasons for the existence of suffering, which is all very head knowledge. And then later on in his life, he wrote a book called A Grief Observed, which gives a beautifully honest and moving account of what it actually feels like to suffer, which was in the wake of his wife's passing away. And so he gives a reflection on actually the effect of what that had on his relationship with God. Because often there's a big difference between knowing something in theory and then living it out. And this is obviously a massive, weighty topic that we don't have time to go into in an all-age service, but just as a very quick reflection from my own experience, which is kind of all I can really talk on, the last few years for me have contained many ups and downs where I, like the cat, I've stood on that haystack and with enthusiasm jumped out and then completely missed the roof. And when I've been in those dark places, the temptation, of course, has been to turn away from God, to think that he's given up on me. But one of the key things that carried me through those dark times was the support from people here at Highfield, the support that I had from people in my home group, from receiving prayer ministry, and also I got some Sozo prayer as well, amongst other things. And so I just wanted to use this as kind of a shout-out, really, for home groups. Home groups are fantastic, the support that we get from one another, and a shout out for prayer ministry. Do go out for prayer ministry. They meet after every service over on the right hand side. And also a shout out to support one another in dark times, so that when the difficulties do come, though it is easier said than done, let's take our desire to run away from a situation and then use that as motivation to run towards God, because God does not ever give up on us. So I'm going to invite the band up now, and we're going to sing in response to that. And this song has a bridge which says, trust him, trust God in the good times, trust him in the rain, trust him with tomorrow, trust him with today. And kind of as a reflection on that, just in our heads, you could quite easily change trust into desire. So desire God in the good times, and desire God in the rain, desire God tomorrow, and desire God today. So if you're able, please do join me in standing to sing.
We've got a story now, and it's a story from the Bible, and it's a story that can be found in the Gospel of John. We're looking at chapter 2, verses 13 to 25. If you do want to follow it, it should be around page 1065 on the church Bibles. And the story goes like this. When it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found people selling cattle, sheep and doves, and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip out of cords and drove all from the temple courts, both sheep and cattle. He scattered the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. To those who sold doves, he said, get these out of here. Stop turning my father's house into a market. His disciples remembered that it is written, zeal for your house will consume me. The Jews then responded to him, what sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all this? Jesus answered them, destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days. They replied, it's taken 46 years to build this temple and you are going to raise it in 3 days? But the temple he had spoken of was his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples recalled what he had said.
Then they believed the scripture and the words that Jesus had spoken. Now, while he was in Jerusalem at the Passover festival, many people saw that the signs he was performing and believed in his name. But Jesus would not entrust himself to them, for he knew all people. He did not need any testimony from mankind, for he knew what was in each person. And this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So we've already looked today, this morning, at a little bit at our personal desires. We've already looked a little bit at the way that, hardship can sometimes drive us, it can drive us closer in our relationship with God. And here, in the reading, we've got this incredible example of how Jesus demonstrated his desire to do God's will in this very physical and practical way. He literally grabs tables, he literally throws doves and all sorts of livestock out of the sanctuary, out of this holy place. He has this righteous anger that came directly from God the Father. And he sees the sanctuary, he sees this holy place defiled, brought into disrepute. It's the most important religious site in Judaism, and it's become a den of thieves. And it's this remarkable story. It's such a good story that it appears in all four stories, Gospels, of Jesus' life. But it's the only one where he makes a whip out of cords. It's remarkable. It's not Jesus meek and mild, is it? It's a man who knows exactly what he needs to do in order to fulfill God's will. And in reading the story or hearing it read, you can't escape Jesus' desire in it. Like in the psalm we read earlier on, Jesus' focus is exclusively on God the Father in heaven. But unlike Psalm 63, it's in reality. It's it practically shown out in Psalm 63. This is what he wants to do. David wants to do this, but here in John, Jesus is doing it. And I just wonder, you know, as Jesus is turning over the tables, as he's throwing out all these doves and cattle, whatever it might be, I wouldn't be at all surprised if in his head he is repeating scripture to himself. You know, if he's saying, you know, earnestly I seek you, I thirst for you, you know, one dove over there, my whole being longs for you, a few coins that way, you know, in a dry and parched land where there's no water. You know, when we are thirsty, really thirsty, we will go to any lengths to get water. And it seems to me that when Jesus sees his Father's house defiled, he'll do anything necessary to restore it. It mentions specifically desire here, though it uses a slightly less common version of it. And the word they use is zeal. And zeal goes beyond normal desire. It's stronger than that. It's sort of a real enthusiasm to do what is right. But for Jesus, his desire is always about what God the Father wants. And I have to give credit to the disciples here. Most of the time in the Gospels, the disciples are pretty thick. Most of the time, they don't get it. Most of the time, Jesus either has to explain to them what he's talking about, or they just don't even bother, and they just kind of go on in ignorance. But in this one time, because of what he's doing, even they understand exactly what he's getting at. And they're reminded of another psalm, Psalm 69, "Zeal for your house will consume me." It's a remarkable passage. But the most incredible thing isn't the fact that he turned over tables. It isn't even the fact that the disciples got it for the first time and kind of only time for a long time. It's found in verse 19, towards the end of the of the passage, where he says, "Destroy the temple and I will raise it again in 3 days." He wasn't talking about the physical temple. He was talking, of course, as we know, that he was talking about his death on a cross and his resurrection 3 days after that. Jesus' desire to see God glorified and to bring people closer to him meant that he was able to do whatever was necessary for those he loved, even if that meant dying in the worst possible means of the day, if it meant separation from God, because that's what happened when he died on the cross. And the proof of it is when he did die, the curtain which was hanging in the temple, the same temple that he's turning the tables over, is torn from top to bottom, showing that we are able to gain access to this God. We're able to give him our desires, and he will listen, and we know that he will listen. I just wonder how this might apply for us today. I wonder, certainly for me, whether my desires are always focused on him. I wonder for me whether my desires, he is my number one desire. I think all too often for me is that he's maybe sometimes tagged on at the end. You know, oh, I want a bigger house. I'd quite like this new job, whatever it might be. Oh, and I'll pray, God, I want you to be in charge too. Is God the focus of our desires? Does everything else spring from our relationship with him, or is he an afterthought to be pegged on at the end if there's time?